Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In recent years, the sharing economy has gone global, but so has the debate around what it means, who it's serving, and whether it can respond to pressing issues like global warming, overconsumption, and food security. The sharing economy includes everything from cars and housing to food and skilled tasks. Major multi-million dollar companies and services like Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, and TaskRabbit are branding their businesses based on the sharing economy model. So how should we define the sharing economy today? What is the original mission of the sharing economy, and how has it changed over the years? What should a sharing economy look like? Today, we're joined by Neil Gorenflot, co-founder of Shareable. It's an award-winning news, action, and connection hub for the sharing transformation. An epiphany in 2004 inspired Neil to leave the corporate world to help people through internet startups, publishing, grassroots organizing, and a circle of friends committed to the common good. And Neil joins us from his office in San Francisco. Hi, Neil. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Anders Fremstad. He's a PhD candidate in the economics department at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Anders' dissertation is on the sharing economy. He's a research associate at the National Priorities Project, and he blogs at the Center for Popular Economics. He's also a member of Couch Surfing. This is a service that allows you to sleep on people's couches around the world for free, and he recently bought a used car on Craigslist. And Anders joins us from Massachusetts. Hi, Anders. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rose.
Nice to have you. So, Neil, let's start off with you. Why don't you talk a little bit about the original mission of the sharing economy? What was it originally intended to do?
Well, I don't know that the sharing economy had a mission so much, but from our perspective as a nonprofit who started covering this in 2009, very early when no one was really talking about sharing yet, our perspective was that the sharing economy was something promising that could address people's economic insecurities and both increase access to resources and reduce resource consumption at the same time and be inclusive. So in the end, it was about economic democracy and better resource use. And I think it's become something else, I mean, at least in the public mind.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. But first, Anders, what would you add to that? How would you describe the original idea behind the sharing economy?
I'd say the sharing economy, I agree with Neil mostly. I mean, they're peer-to-peer platforms that I think were intended to sort of increase utilization of goods from vehicles and lodging to tools and appliances. I think some sort of focused on transferring ownership of goods, like Freecycle or Craigslist, while others sort of help people actually share, so borrow and lend goods. And I think that, you know, some of these are explicitly non-market platforms. Couch surfing and Freecycle are both examples of this, where you let someone stay on your couch for free, you stay with people for free. Freecycle sort of insists that people give away things they no longer need for free. But I think other and valuable platforms also are sort of market-based. So examples of that would be Craigslist or Airbnb.
So how are the non-market-based services doing these days with all of this new competition? Like, for example, couch surfing, what a great idea. I had a friend who traveled around Europe and slept on couches for free and met amazing people. No money exchanged. I mean, they took each other out to dinner, but that was about it. So how are services like that doing?
I think that one of the main challenges for the non-market platforms, it's much harder for them to raise the sort of money you need to build a good solid platform. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges sort of facing the corporate sharing economy, that's very hard to get a platform going. And then once you do get them going, once they are truly successful, they don't have, they sort of become monopolies with a lot of power that sort of is sort of questionable in helping sort of the broader movement. So I think that's an important issue in the sharing economy today.
And Neil, what's really interesting is the sharing economy is receiving so much attention. And when you look at the company names that come up in articles about the sharing economy, over and over again, it's Airbnb, Lyft, Uber. I mean, Uber's valued at $17 billion. So what are your thoughts about these major multi-million dollar corporations that have now come to represent the sharing economy?
Yeah, well, they've changed a lot from when they started, when we started covering them. They were much more community-based, and were offering a kind of, I think, substantially different and more rewarding experience that was a very human. For instance, Airbnb, their tagline used to be, travel like a human, and that was really my experience with it. But over time, as they've grown so quickly, taken on so much capital, their priorities and even their business models had changed dramatically. And they're big multinational corporations. They're beholden to their investors. They've raised tremendous amounts of money. And I think that a conflict between, the attention they pay to their experience and to their customers and their allegiance to investors is causing them to change dramatically and be less of, much less about sharing and more just about growth and business as usual.
So when these companies initially launched, did you feel like they really were based on the sharing model?
Yeah, they were scrappy and they were hometown, you know, the ones that you mentioned, they're like hometown San Francisco heroes, right? Take for example Lyft. It used to be called Zimride, and it was ride sharing. It wasn't a competitor to taxis. And it was linking people going from city to city or college to college. And as I mentioned with Airbnb, in the early days, you would stay with your host and you would meet your host. And now it's most of the listings are just vacation rentals.
Hmm. Well, and I want to describe, because I know some of our listeners, don't really use much technology, and I'm sure that they've read about these. So Airbnb basically allows you to either rent a room or to rent an entire place. And, you know, the prices obviously range $100, sometimes a lot more than that. But also, can you talk a little bit about Lyft and Uber and how they've evolved? I mean, basically, they're offering rides. So how much has changed with the ride companies?
Yeah, so in the case of Lyft, they started out as Zimride, and it was true ride sharing. And now they're kind of a peer-to-peer taxi service, more or less, where instead of getting a Lyft from a standard taxi, you get a Lyft from it might be your neighbor. It's probably not your neighbor, but it's someone like you. But they have a car and they'll give you a ride, and you pay through your smartphone. And in some ways, it's like a better service than a taxi. And that's why they've gotten so much attention and money. But then this is like a taxi. It's not sharing. I mean, in the sense that you're utilizing resources in a different way and possibly a more efficient way and reducing the reliance on car ownership for people to get around, there could be some very positive things. But it's it's a lot different than how they started out as a ride sharing company.
And so we'll talk about where all this money's coming from, because Airbnb is valued at $10 billion with a B. Uber is now valued at $17 billion. And I'm wondering, Anders, because these major corporations are considered part of the, quote, sharing economy, how has that changed the original mission of the sharing economy when we talk about democracy and citizens determining how the economy works? There was so much attention on co-ops, for example, when we first started talking about the sharing economy. How has that all changed?
Well, I think the fundamental difficulty I see in the sharing economy when it comes to sort of the corporate sharing economy is these platforms just have really large, what we call in economics, sort of returns to scale, where you can't really imagine a competitor to Airbnb coming into that market and really competing with it. So what that does is as an individual platform becomes very successful, they get a lot of power in determining, for example, what share of the transaction they're going to sort of take out of the two quote-unquote peers who are, renting out a room or an apartment to somebody for a few days. They also get a lot of say in how they're going to run the platform, how they're going to facilitate, what sort of transactions they're going to facilitate. And I think that sort of raises a question of, well, within this sort of situation, like, what sort of ways can we give users and communities greater say again in how these platforms are run and managed? And what should we do beyond just trying to get the highest possible return for the companies that now own some of these platforms?
That is Anders Fremstad, a PhD candidate in the Economics Department at the University of Massachusetts. His dissertation is on the sharing economy, and he's a research associate at the National Priorities Project. He's also a member of Couchsurfing, which is a great service that allows you to sleep on people's couches around the world. We're also joined by Neil Gorenflot, co-founder of Shareable, an award-winning news action connection hub for the sharing transformation. He had an epiphany in 2004. He left the corporate world to help people share through publishing and grassroots organizing. And today we are talking about the sharing economy. What was its original mission? So much attention, for example, was on sharing services, and then also supporting co-ops. And it's transformed. Now we've got companies like Airbnb, Uber, and Lyft who are considered part of the sharing economy. Do you think they should be? What are your thoughts on the original mission, and what do you think the sharing economy should really look like? And if you've used these services, do you think they should be part of the sharing economy or considered part of it? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Leslie who says, as far as I can tell, the quote sharing economy is a euphemism for overpriced services provided by unregulated individuals who offer no actual jobs, no job security, and no benefits. Welcome back to the 19th century. Anders, your dissertation is on the sharing economy. What do you think of that comment?
Well, I think I want to go back to something Neil mentioned earlier. I mean, to the extent that platforms can sort of increase the utilization of goods that we have, I think those are useful platforms. I think the ones that are basically providing unregulated labor markets, I mean, to me, skill sharing, when that involves just hiring someone doing a job for you and not having to pay them a certain amount, not having to get in a certain number of hours and so on, there's nothing particularly useful about a platform like that. So I would agree with the caller that, you know, it's largely some companies figuring out how to get some money out of taking advantage of these sort of unregulated labor markets. But I do think that there are some valuable platforms out there that could and do increase the utilization of goods. And I think some of those can be valuable even if someone's making some money by facilitating that sort of sharing.
Well, and the fact is people are using these services, right? I mean, Airbnb, again, is valued at $10 billion and Uber is valued at $17 billion. So people are really flocking to these services.
Yeah, so Airbnb, I think to the extent that some people would rather stay with someone in their home when they travel, I mean, I think that offering someone that service, if you want to call it that, is incredibly valuable. And the extent that we have extra rooms all over the place that people would like to have guests in, I think it's providing a valuable service. I'm much less enthusiastic about something like TaxRabbit, which is just providing an unregulated labor market.
And so let's talk about that, because this is an interesting one. So TaskRabbit, you can basically post something like, I need someone to help me move a dresser, or I need someone to build me a website. And then people, you can either put a price down or people can bid on it, right? And there are also other services. One friend said she found something where it was like it's like a $5 service fee. That's it. And then if you like the service, you can pay them more money.
I don't know the details about these different sort of labor markets, essentially unregulated labor markets that have popped up. But in general, I'm fairly skeptical about their value to society. I think a lot of people are very vulnerable, especially now in this sort of long, ongoing economic downturn, and we should be wary about what those are doing to workers.
What are your thoughts on that, Neil? And what did you think of the email from Leslie?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, I agree with Leslie, and I just think, you know, we need to turn our attention to real solutions, and that, you know, people have the power to create and take their economic destiny into their own hands, and one of the ways is through, you know, worker ownership of businesses, you know, through cooperatives and other structures that give workers ownership and control. And the cooperative movement is actually growing. Also, this is what doesn't get the news, because you know there isn't huge billions of dollars flowing into it, and we're obsessed with technology and technology news, and less so with things that seem to matter more. And in the case of cooperatives, there are over around the world 800 million members of cooperatives, and cooperatives employ more than the Fortune 500. And they're growing as a solution to our economic crisis. As multinational corporations, work as quickly as possible to, reduce the number of employees and pay. Worker cooperatives are growing, and they tend to pay more money, and they're more resilient in economic downturns. And there is, they also last longer. And I saw a recent report that said that people who work for a worker cooperative also live longer.
Well, thank you for the email, Leslie. We have another one from Sheila, who says, once a good idea for a shared economy gets co-opted by a capitalist version, its primary goal is to take care of its shareholders by law, keep the idea small and only local, and set up as a co-op in order to truly meet the goal of a shared economy. What are your thoughts on that, Anders? And actually, Forbes had an interesting article called Why Uber and Airbnb Might Be in Big Trouble. And it's because they're beholden to shareholders. And a lot of investors say that there's no way they're going to be able to keep up with what the shareholders demand.
I think that's, well, I guess I disagree somewhat with the email. I mean, I think a lot of these platforms, by their very nature, are going to be large and global. I completely agree with her that a cooperative would be a very interesting model for these sharing platforms. I think it would be the best model, and I would like to see, sharing economy platforms going that way and deciding that, the way they're going to make some of their decisions is going to be by allowing the people who use these platforms, who are members of these platforms, to vote on some of the important sort of internal policies that regulate how people interact with one another on those platforms. So I think that would be, for me, that would be one of the developments that would give me the greatest hope about the future of a real sharing economy.
And what are your thoughts, Neil?
Yeah, I like the gist of where she was going with that. And it brought to mind an example of something that we could see more of the future, and that I would like to see more of the future, a company called Lokonomics, getting ready to launch in the fall. And it's basically a version of TaskRabbit that's a cooperative. So the in this case, the quote-unquote rabbits own the business. And then would make the decisions and reap all of the rewards of the platform. And this is something that could, where ownership and control that workers have ownership and control, and that it could also scale. So it's an interesting mesh of sort of internet dynamics and what happens with cooperatives.
Rebecca writes, TaskRabbit seems to be a way for the overly busy and rich to bid down the lowest, most desperate. She says, I have made a lot of money from Airbnb and now a sometime Uber driver. I have issues with both. I am appalled at how Uber is running their business. They change their rules at any moment. Their cut changed from 5% to 20% in a moment. They gave me $10 for $20 of free fare for a new customer. Then suddenly a friend got a different amount. There's no way to organize with other drivers. It's unclear to me how it's affecting the economy for the taxi and the limo drivers. And Neil, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, every time I take a cab, the cab drivers say that their salaries have been cut in half, and they fear that they might not even be in business in a couple of years because of these services.
Right. So I talked to an Uber driver a couple weeks ago, and he said that they consistently underestimate like the arrival time, and they say it's that their Lyft is going to get there faster than it does, and that they don't tell. Oftentimes, they don't tell the person what the fare is going to be, and so this causes a lot of dissatisfaction. I think what this is a signal of is that they are under tremendous pressure to grow, and then I think they're they may be starting to push ethical boundaries to meet their targets.
Well, thank you for that email. Let's go to a few calls before break. Let's hear from KDF in San Francisco. Hi, KDF.
Hi, thanks. You know, the subterfuge of corporations hiding behind the word sharing is laughable if it wasn't criminal. Propaganda can't absolve Uber or Lyft or other TNCs of their legal problems, according to the New York State Attorney General, who's filed more than 10 causes of action against Lyft as to why their business is illegal. Our Attorney General, Kamala Harris, needs to do the same in California. What these schemes are doing is racketeering, not sharing. They've made sharing a sleazy word. Houston is prosecuting them for wire fraud, unfair business practices, false advertising, racketeering. Connecticut is also charging them under the RICO Act. Calling Uber and Lyft sharing is a smokescreen. Anyone who believes corporations and venture capitalists are into these schemes because they like to share has to look at who's paying the taxes in our country. If their objective is to share, they could volunteer to pay taxes equal to what was demanded during President Eisenhower's time. Notice their deceit. Warren Buffett has made it very clear.
Well,
we working class people pay a higher percentage than they do.
Well, thanks for calling. We have a similar sentiment from Joe, who writes in, when we tell our kids to share, we aren't suggesting that they sell their cookies or rent their toys. Couch surfing is sharing. Airbnb is renting. Ride sharing is sharing. Lyft is selling a service. It's a very simple distinction, she writes. Sharing does not involve the exchange of currency or even the exchange of goods or services. That's called bartering. Anders, do you think that's part of the problem? I mean, do you think Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, and the rest should even be considered part of the sharing model?
I think that I don't think that necessarily paying renting items is necessarily should disqualify you from being sort of part of the sharing economy. For me, it really is about whether or not you're using these resources any more efficiently than we use them today. So while Uber, to me, and Lyft don't seem any better really than a taxi service, I don't think that changes the fact that we need to change the way that we are using vehicles in the United States. And, we need to radically change how we're using them. And some of that might not just be, picking up people and ride-sharing, ride-sharing with people for free. Some of it might be ride-sharing with people for a small cost. But I think the key is sort of figuring out how to get more people in cars and using the cars we have more more effectively. I mean, right now, we have cars on average that are used 1 hour a day, and they have 1.7 people in them. I mean, that's ridiculous. So although I don't have a lot of sympathy for Uber and Lyft, I do think that we need to change, we somehow need to change how we're using cars in this country, and some of that might involve some people paying some other people a little bit of money to ride in them.
That is Anders Fremstad, a PhD candidate in the Economics Department at the University of Massachusetts. His dissertation is on this topic, the sharing economy. Neil Gorenflot is co-founder of Shareable, an award-winning news, action, and connection hub for the sharing transformation. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the sharing economy. What was its original mission? How has it evolved over the years? What are your thoughts on the sharing economy? How do you think it should be defined? How should it be created? If you use services like Airbnb, Uber, Lyft, if you work for them, we'd love to hear from you. And we will take more of your calls. We've got full lines, actually. We'll take more of your calls right after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call, on the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. or by going to yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. KLW is a listener-supported local public radio station for the Bay Area at 91.7 and worldwide at kalw.org, supported by folks like Phyllis Malandra of Berkeley and Zila Rowland of San Francisco. Thank you for making Your Call possible on Local Public Radio. Now back to Rose and Your Call.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about how the Affordable Care Act is changing health care, including yours. There's a new report by the Kaiser Family Foundation that found about 3.5 million or 58% of uninsured Californians have now signed up for coverage. So we will talk about how the Affordable Care Act has changed the costs and the quality of care. And we'd love to hear personal stories. So be sure to give us a call or send us an email about that. Feedback at yourcallradio.org. You can also drop us a line if you have a show or a guest idea. Today, we are talking about the sharing economy. It was really based on economic democracy, allowing citizens to determine how the economy works. Cooperatives are pretty close to the ideal, but now we are seeing major multi-million dollar companies brand themselves based on the sharing model. Well, some of these companies are valued in the billions. Uber, the car riding service, is valued at $17 billion. Airbnb is valued at $10 billion. So what are your thoughts on that? How would you define the sharing economy? What do you think it should look like? And if you've taken part in any of these services, what are your thoughts if you work for any of these companies? We'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. You can also leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. And I just wanted to talk about this from a position. I'm a lawyer who represents people who have regulated licenses, and I'm definitely, I'm a child of the '60s. I'm a veteran of co-ops and communes, and I'm very much in favor of. We have a fantastic co-op in Berkeley called the Cheese Board, which is probably a successful example of that model. When it comes to companies like Uber, and I don't know that much about Airbnb, but I know a bit about Uber, and I agree with the other caller who said that to call that a share economy is, I don't know, sort of maybe like, I don't see any distinction really between Uber and Amazon or any other internet-based economy, company that is essentially saying, because we can do this, it's legal. There are taxi services that go through a tremendous amount to get a taxi medallion. Taxi drivers go through an awful lot to pay for a taxi medallion. And the idea that someone who can simply put together an internet service, unregulated, uninsured in the early days, I don't know about now, but I don't think people realized that when they got into an Uber car, very likely that driver didn't have an extensive liability policy that was going to cover them if they got, broadsided by an uninsured motorist. Those are the kind of things I find actually offensive.
Hmm.
Because I feel as though they essentially have declared, sort of, I'm a part-time musician, and when Napster was giving away people's music for free, I found that offensive. It's all of a sudden, because we have the internet, there is now a new country called the internet, in which ordinary laws of regulation, the need for licenses, the need for insurance, the recognition that if you're providing a service, the collective does need control over how you do that service.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that these companies should be considered part of the sharing economy? And
no.
if they weren't, I mean, I'm sure you'd be bothered by them, but do you think that's part of the problem here?
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that the Cheese Board or any other successful collective is owned by its workers doesn't absolve it from having to pay state taxes, minimum wage, have a health inspection. They're under the same fabric of regulation as every other company. Uber, somehow or other, because I don't know if that's the one with the mustaches on the car or not, but I sometimes thought to myself, let's see, if I put a mustache on my car, does that mean that I can take people anywhere I want to for whatever price I want to?
Well,
it's offensive to an old guy like me who thought that cooperatives had come and the 60s was about genuinely respecting people's rights and not necessarily taking advantage of people who have built a way of life by their own effort. just because you can do it on the internet.
Well, thank you for calling. There's a couple different things going on here. I'm getting slammed with emails, Neil and Anders, from listeners who say that these companies should not be considered part of the sharing economy. John says, the sharing economy is where some libertarian finds a way to use technology to circumvent laws and regulations frequently enacted to protect the public. They convince people to rent out their property and labor to people they don't know, sent to them by a website which keeps a share of their proceeds. So the sharing website is in the business of selling goods. No wonder Wall Street values them highly. And then the Financial Times had a piece about the author Evgeny Morozov. He takes a look at the social implications of technology, and he basically argues that the sharing economy is accelerating the transformation of workers into, quote, always-on self-employed entrepreneurs who must think like brands. He dubs it neoliberalism on steroids. So there's a couple things going on. A lot of listeners say that these companies should not be considered part of the sharing economy and that they are really taking advantage of workers. Neil, what are your thoughts on that? Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
The term sharing economy, I think, has become really problematic, and maybe we should just discard it. And you know, what we're really interested in at Shareable and writing about as a nonprofit, as a movement support organization to help people share, we're interested in economic innovations that help people take control of their economic destiny, where they own and manage enterprises as peers, like cooperatives, and that resources are used more efficiently at the same time. That's why sharing is really important to us, and I think an important solution for the world, because it can increase access to resources while reducing resource consumption at the same time. And those are two things that we need to do. Aggressively to stabilize our society.
Anders, what are your thoughts on this? Should they just be called services, or do you think that's part of the problem? We're getting a lot of emails about the fact that they just should not be considered part of the sharing economy.
Well, I sympathize with people emailing that Uber and TaskRabbit and so on shouldn't be part of the sharing economy. I agree with the caller that we should be able to regulate these companies in the same way we regulate regular companies. I guess I'm a little bit ambivalent about what we are going to term these things, but I think we should focus on those platforms or those ways in which we can share resources to, as Neil said, increase access to goods and reduce sort of material flow in this economy.
We have an email from Edwin who says, before companies like Lyft and Uber, a black man like me could not get a cab. Now I can just go to my phone and someone will pick me up without caring about the color of my skin or worrying that I'm going to rob them. Taxi companies and the people who run them have been discriminating against us for decades. I've been thrown in jail for protesting a cabbie who wanted to overcharge me. Well, thank you for the email, Edwin, and you can send us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. So, Neil, you talked about a few examples of a sharing economy based on what it was intended for, you know, based on economic democracy and allowing citizens to determine how the economy works. Co-ops are close to the ideal. What else are you seeing out there that's happening that we might not be hearing about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I think, under-the-radar activity that doesn't get the headlines. And while you see Airbnb and Uber get the money and the attention, there are hardworking people in local communities and cities around the world that are starting time banks and co-working spaces and tool libraries and community gardens and farmers markets. And so what we see is a very robust and also quickly growing and very decentralized and organic movement for sharing. And what we've started to do is help to organize and bring attention to this. And last fall we started the Sharing Cities Network to link those grassroots sharing activists together in coherent movements in cities around the world.
That is Neil Gorenflot, co-founder of Shareable, an award-winning news action and connection hub for the sharing transformation. Anders Fremstad is a PhD candidate in the economics department at the University of Massachusetts. His dissertation is on the sharing economy. And now I would like to welcome Chris Tittle to the show. Chris is director of Organizational Resilience. This is a group that provides tools so communities can develop their own sustainable sources of food, housing, energy, jobs, and other aspects of a thriving community. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. So we've been talking a lot about the original mission of the sharing economy and how it's evolved to now include these massive corporations like Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb. But you work with organizational resilience. Can you tell us about some of the things that are happening under the radar that are based on the original mission of the sharing economy?
Sure, and just to clarify, I'm with the Sustainable Economies Law Center, and so what we do is provide essential legal tools to promote the transition to more just and resilient local economies. So as you say, we're working on the ground with a lot of really creative and innovative projects that are building resilience in the local community. So working with existing resources to grow the wealth of communities themselves. I think it was Neil who already alluded to a really exciting project that we are supporting called Loconomics, which is, as they say, task rabbit as if the rabbits owned the business. So we're working to convert and help convert existing businesses to cooperative legal structures so that all the wealth that is generated by these new technologies and new platforms is actually being shared and redistributed to the people that create that value. So that's one of the really exciting things. We're also launching in a couple of months a worker co-op academy. So we're actually going to be helping to incubate and grow existing cooperatives specifically run by low and middle income workers here in the Bay Area.
So tell us more, when is this co-op service going to run that's kind of like TaskRabbit, but it'll allow the workers to actually make their own decisions? When will that launch?
Loconomics is an existing platform. We're working with them to convert into cooperative ownership. So we're in the process of writing their bylaws and their governance structures, and we're really excited. It should be launching as a cooperative in a couple of months. But what the power is some of the other listeners have written in about, is that it's connecting people at a local level, but a platform that is global. So in this case, it's not owned by the workers per se, but it's owned by all of the freelancers who are adding the value to the platform. So if you're a psychotherapist or a permaculture designer or any other kind of freelance sort of independent contractor position, as part of this platform, you actually have a say in the governance of the business and the value that's generated by the collective community of freelancers is then redistributed back to everyone based on how much you contributed to that value.
Wow. Well, I bet we're getting a lot of emails from people who drive for Uber and Lyft, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to know more about this. So is it called Loconomics? Can you spell that for us?
That's right. Loconomics.
Okay.
Loconomics.
And so people who are interested in getting involved should they search for that, Loconomics?
That's right. It should be easy to find on a Google search.
Okay. Great. It's Loconomics. I just wanted to read an email from Kate. She drives for Uber. She said, last night I did an appraisal of my week of driving. After 31 hours, I made $1,079. Uber takes 20. So that leaves her with 28, and then she needs to pay taxes and wear and tear. She makes about $20 per hour. She says, we don't get to write off gas, mileage, toll, registration, so it's not as lucrative as they lead you to believe. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, I think it's already been spoken to by all the guests, is that, basically one of the problematic aspects of these large platforms is that it's taking wealth out of communities. So to the extent that the profits and the wealth that are being generated by them are actually flowing upwards to the venture capitalists who invested in them, it's not actually really benefiting a larger sense of community. So, you know, it may be a successful business and it may be providing convenient ways of using resources, but at least from our perspective at the Sustainable Economies Law Center, it's not really generating local resilience.
All right. Well, thank you for that email, Kate. And let's go next to Laura in San Francisco. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Let me take you off speaker here. I'm an Airbnb host, and I use Uber, and I've used TaskRabbit, and have had very positive experiences with all of these things. I think that one of the points you guys are missing is that this is providing opportunity for a lot of people in a very uncertain economy. A lot of people have lost jobs, could lose their jobs. They no longer want to depend on just one stream of revenue to make them to make sure that their survival is intact. And these are the value that a lot of these platforms bring. While it may not be appropriate to call it sharing, they're aggregating services. They're aggregating resources. They are providing more efficient use of resources, and they're organizing and creating a brand around that. So it's giving people like me and a lot of the people who drive for Uber opportunities to drive that they might not otherwise have, because otherwise it's going to be word of mouth. So I think we're missing the fact that these are services that people like. They're services that improve upon the way, for example, taxi services were working in San Francisco before. These are things that are natural evolutions on services that are already out there. And I think people are forgetting about the fact that there were many eBay entrepreneurs created. There were many people who valued Craigslist because it allowed them to move product and resources. For example, I mentioned I used TaskRabbit. I had to have a curtain rod hung. How do you find somebody to do that for you? Again, providing an opportunity to aggregate a request and aggregate a response to that request has a lot of value, and it does cost money to create a platform that allows that to happen. Mm. So I don't hear very many people calling in saying how this has provided them an opportunity that they otherwise would not have been able to uncover. So I think that's really important, and I think it's also an opportunity for these platforms, and many of them are doing it already. I mean, I can tell you that VRBO and Airbnb do this. They do have a way to provide insurance. They do have a way to provide reviews. They do have a way to provide the opportunity to delist you if you've done something wrong or there's a complaint against you. So there is a fair amount of regulation that these kind of platforms are trying to bring to the table. I'm not saying it's far enough because I think these services are still new.
Right. But and Laura, let me ask you about the concerns people have about how this is really transforming the labor industry. There's an erosion, as you said, of full-time employment in this country. A lot of writers say this is an assault on trade unions. You don't get health care. You don't get benefits. And so in the words of Agnevi Moravaz, a guy who takes a look at technology, he says this is really transforming workers into always-on self-employed entrepreneurs who must think like brands. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's happening regardless of whether these platforms exist. I think everybody does have to think for themselves and start being sure that they can take care of themselves in the future. And so I think it's just leaning into that that trend that's already occurring. I mean, there isn't going to be a lot of long-term employment where people get pension funds and things like that as there might have been when I first started working.
Do you think that workers might galvanize eventually who work for these services and demand decent pay and decent benefits? Or do you think they'll just accept the...
I think it is possible, but I think they are getting decent pay and decent benefits as long as they understand the contract with which they're entering with these organizations. I think the issue is they might not otherwise have work at all, and I don't think these platforms were designed to take advantage of people. I think they were, again, designed to help people find services that are hard to find. Hmm.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Laura. Neil Gorenflot, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, is it fair to point to these companies and say they're causing these problems, or are we talking about something bigger here?
We're definitely talking about something bigger. They are just capitalizing on a dynamic that's already underway. And so, you know, we really need to turn our attention, I think, to the larger issues. And I mean, so that's what, you know, that's how I see it.
What are your thoughts, Anders?
I think that there is something to, I think there is something to the technological sort of value that these platforms are using, and I don't think it's something that we can imagine wanting to get rid of. It's great to have online platforms to hook people up in all sorts of ways. But the question, I think, is, well, what sort of power do we give users, and in this case, workers, over the terms of these transactions? And I think that's a place that we haven't seen as much movement as we should and as much as I would expect sort of in the years to come.
And Chris, again, you work with the Sustainable Economies Law Center. How do you see this playing out? I mean, given that with Lokenomics, workers are, it sounds like they're going to have a lot more control over what they do and what they make, for example, than TaskRabbit. Is that right?
That's right. And I definitely agree with Neil that, you know, this is part of a much larger systemic change in our economy. And so what we're trying to do is provide both the direct legal support to people who are innovating and creating new ways of connecting people to each other in ways that keeps wealth flowing locally, but also addressing the larger policy and regulatory structures that will be driving or in some cases constraining the economy as it changes. So to the extent that this is part of a much larger national and even international movement towards economic democracy, towards reclaiming some democratic control of who creates value and who benefits from it, I don't know that demonizing these particular companies is all that valuable, but I think we have to put it in that much larger context of large-scale systemic change.
And I'm sorry, I misspoke when I read Kate's email about Uber. She says she does get to write off gas, mileage, toll, and registration. Sorry about that, Kate. I'm getting a ton of emails, and I just misspoke when I read your email, but thanks for writing in again. Let's take a few more calls before we have to end here. Let's go to Lee in San Francisco. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Whoa.
I hope you can hear me.
Hi.
Can
you, if you can turn your radio down. Thank you.
Yeah, I just turned it off. Here's my problem. This is not sharing, and many people have gone over that, so I'm not going to go over it again. But, you know, I really expected you guys to kind of define the meaning within the context, because, of course, context is everything when it comes to meaning. And so to call Uber, Lyft, and Airbnb, to equate them with services like Craigslist, I mean, they're completely different models, for one thing. And so I really expected you to have more definitions and distinctions around this discussion, because it is a really important and valid one, and one that we need to have. I was so looking forward to it.
Well, have you been listening since the beginning? Because we definitely talked about that in the beginning.
I have.
So what do you think is missing? What would you like to ask our guests?
Well, I would like to know, what does sharing mean when, you know, these services always start out as we're all in this together, and then before we know it, they're $10 billion companies. We don't share in those profits, and people who work for them don't share in those profits and increased resources. In fact, as you pointed out, the power that enables them to make arbitrary and quixotic decisions and reversals and changes to agreements means that we become more vulnerable as they become more powerful. So how is that sharing? That doesn't jibe with any notion of sharing that I've ever been familiar with.
Well, thank you for calling.
I have a question.
Okay.
My question is also, so that's one comment that I would like you to address.
And we're almost out of time, so please.
Okay,
go
my
ahead.
Question is, one model of sharing that seems promising is, there are a lot of these buildings that have been taken over by people who are incubating and starting up and hacking. Do your guests think that's a good model for living in the future for, you know, mostly young people who are doing that?
Chris, do you want to take that?
I think I may have missed part of the question, but it sounds like, you know, to the extent that people are sharing homes and actually repurposing the way that we live, so that we actually are living more integrated work and professional lives, I think, you know, that's definitely an exciting prospect. And to the broader comment about what actually might a sharing economy be, I think if it's anything, it has to be about sharing wealth, right, so that it's more equally distributed, and sharing power so that the governance of existing enterprises are actually more democratic and more participatory, and also that companies or sharing economy enterprises are actually challenging dominant institutions that are exploiting workers and exploiting the environment. So to me, those have to be part of any kind of true sharing economy.
And Anders, final thoughts from you, about 30 seconds. Where do you see this going? And how can it be more democratic?
Well, I think there is no doubt that we're going to continue to use online platforms for all these sorts of transactions we're seeing. I think the key way to make them democratic, I think on the one hand, we need to sort of be able to regulate these companies in similar sorts of ways that we regulate every other country, other company. People have pointed that out. But I think secondly, it's really important for us to think about bringing a cooperative model into some of these platforms. And I think that would solve a lot of the issues that we've sort of been talking about today. If drivers had more to say how Uber runs, if hosts had more of a say how Airbnb runs, I think that would be good for the movement in the long term.
And Neil, a quick final thoughts?
Yeah, the Airbnb, Lyft, Uber, you know, I think what's going to happen is what happened with Facebook as it got bigger, that privacy and eroded, more advertising was on the platform, and also people who had fan pages lost the ability to reach their own fans and had to pay for the ability to reach the fans they built themselves on their own fan pages.
That is Neil Gorenflot, co-founder of Shareable. Anders Firmstad wrote his dissertation on the sharing economy, and Chris Tittle is with the Sustainable Economies Law Center. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. How is Obamacare changing American health care, including yours? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. According to a new report by the Kaiser Family Foundation, 3.4 million, or 58% of uninsured Californians, have signed up for coverage. So who's signing up, and how have the costs and quality of care changed? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.